Today's episode of The Overwhelmed Brain is brought to you by Kaya Biotics. If you want a healthy gut, take the probiotic that's been certified organic and free of additives, fillers, or binders. Visit Kaya Biotics, that's K-A-Y-A, biotics.com, and enter the promo code BRAIN during checkout to get $15 off your first order. Are you annoyed by affirmations? Are you tired of that same old, rehashed personal growth advice that all seems to boil down to, think positively and all your problems will go away? If affirmations feel like lies and positive thinking feels like denial, then I want you to get ready. The Overwhelmed Brain is here to help you create the life you want now. Hello and welcome to The Overwhelmed Brain. My name is Paul Coliani. I am a personal empowerment coach, and this is the show where I help you tackle life's toughest challenges. I want to help you increase your emotional intelligence, strengthen your self-worth and self-esteem, and empower you so that you can make decisions that are right for you. Everything I talk about in this show is my personal opinion and is meant for informational and educational purposes only. Always consult a medical or psychological professional before making any changes that could affect your physical or mental health. I got through that whole thing without a mistake. I want to talk about the things that we say to ourselves, our inner dialogue, but not so much like, I'm so stupid, or I can't believe I did that. What's wrong with me? Not so much that. It's the inner dialogue that we repeat from others. I mean, not their inner dialogue, but we repeat what they say to us or say about us inside our own head. I think the best example of this is, I think this came up in the Overwhelmed Brain Empowerment group on Facebook. If you're not part of that, feel free to join. Go to Facebook and look up the Overwhelmed Brain Empowerment group. But in there, I think someone said she was getting texts from someone, and when she would read these texts, she would feel bad. And I said, you have to be really careful when you are reading a message to you from someone else that is putting you down. Because what happens is you use your own voice when you read it. I mean, you may use their voice, but what happens is that we read something on a screen, and often we use our own voice, which means if we're reading, you're a jerk. I can't believe you did that to me. You are a bad person. You are immoral. You are unethical. And I hate you. I mean, all of that could be written, hopefully not to you, but it could be something like that or something that makes you feel bad. And while you're reading it, you're most likely reading it in your own voice. What does that do? That is more or less a self-affirmation. When you're reading these things to you that are negative in nature about you, it is like a self-affirmation. I am a jerk. I am hated. I am immoral. I am unethical. And because it feels bad, you are going to most likely remember it from that point on. It's like when you get 100 compliments and then that one person who doesn't like you says something, that's the one that sticks. And then that's the one we keep thinking about. And then that's the one we keep repeating in our mind and going through it. And it instills doubt. It instills sometimes fear. It lowers our self-worth. It lowers our self-esteem. It causes us to believe things about ourselves that aren't true. Now, some of it may be true. Maybe you did something to hurt someone and they're saying, hey, you did this thing to hurt me. I don't like you. You're a bad person. Maybe you did bad behavior and that's what they're telling you and now you've got to deal with that. But for the most part, we have to remember, first of all, that people, when they put us down, they're talking to us through their filters and their standards and their values and their perception of what happened. And I've found that almost always our intentions are almost always true. Our intentions are honest. Our intentions are almost always true. Unless you're unscrupulous, unless you're out of integrity, unless you do something that you thought you could get away with or something dishonest. I'm not talking about those people. I'm talking about, for example, when you're in a relationship and you attempt to do something that is within your integrity and honest, and then it comes out wrong. Then it comes out in a way that is taken wrong. It's sort of like I was caught speeding one day. It was many years ago. And the cop pulled me over, and I was confused. I was following the speed limit. I had my cruise control on, and he said, "You were going 10 miles over the speed limit." I was like, "What?" I had my cruise control on. And he said, "Well, you know, the speed changes at one point." I forget where he said. And I thought, I didn't see the sign. My intention was honest. My intention was true. My intention was to follow the law. Yet I was pulled over for speeding, even though my intentions were good. I wanted to obey the law. That was my full intention. Yet it didn't matter because he caught me doing something that was against the law. So he cited me. And I just sat there in confusion because I thought when you do the right thing, or at least try to do the right thing, you get treated right. And he's heard every story, so he's not going to say, "Oh, sure, your intention was that, but that doesn't matter. I caught you doing something that was wrong." And so I had to pay that fine and go through that process. But that's what it reminds me of. It reminds me that when you have good intentions, you know what they say, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. I don't really like that proverb, but it seems to be true sometimes. When you're trying to do the right thing, it can come out wrong. So this is what happens, is you try to do the right thing sometimes, and then it comes out wrong, and then somebody puts you down for it. "What? Why would you do that? What do you mean? I had good intentions. I didn't mean to do that. I didn't mean to hurt you." And that really affects our lives. It really affects our relationships. So this is what I mean, is that even when we try to do the right thing, people can put us down. And then there are people that just put us down. They put us down for many reasons. They could have been raised that way. They're, like I said, their values and standards aren't the same as our values and standards. They want us to feel bad so that they can feel good or superior. Some people do that. Some people uplift themselves by putting others down. And if you're down there, I'm automatically up here. I feel better about myself when I'm superior to you. There are people like that. There are all kinds of people. But what happens is when they put us down, how do we take it? How do we absorb that into our system? Often what I'll do, even if I have 1,000 people saying wonderful things about me or the show, that one person that says, "I can't believe you gave that person that advice. You're not a licensed psychologist. How dare you put that person in jeopardy?" I think, what is this? What is this about? It really sticks with me. And I have to review the show. This actually happened once. I actually had to review the show that they were talking about and figure out, well, you know, what did I tell this person that they said I re-traumatized them? And I listened to what they said, and they were wrong. They actually said that I said something that I didn't say. So not only did I feel bad and feel fear that I might have, you know, messed someone up, they were also wrong. So here I was spending all my time trying to figure out what I did wrong when I didn't do anything wrong. I listened to that whole episode again and found that I was very careful how I approached that subject, and there was nothing wrong with it. And so this person's filters, this person's interpretation, this person's bias looked at me as someone that couldn't be trusted from that point on. So she stopped listening to my show. And that's unfortunate because there's nothing I can do about it. And now she thinks I'm just this untrustworthy, dangerous person out there giving bad advice. I mean, maybe somebody thinks that, but I haven't heard that again from anyone else. So it's interesting how we carry around these perceptions and filters, and then we put these biases on people that we hear one thing one time and we misinterpret it, and then we judge that person from that point on. That's kind of scary that we can just make this one mistake and think this person's not good. Because, you know, how many times have we done that? We misinterpret what someone says, then we don't think of them as highly as we used to. And sometimes we're right, sometimes we're not. But, you know, that's an aside, because the point is that when you hear something bad about yourself, it usually sticks. And then what do you say to yourself afterward for days or weeks or months or even years? Am I repeating what that person said in my head? That's the inner dialogue. but not so much the self-initiated inner dialogue where you say, I'm so stupid. Why did I do that? How come I'm such a failure? How come I can't achieve anything? That inner dialogue is very personal. But this outer inner dialogue, where we get our dialogue from outside of ourselves, where someone might say, you're a bad person, you're an idiot, or they might use more colorful words, but you get what I mean. They want to put you down in some way so that you feel really bad about yourself. That's also part of the emotional abuse cycle. How can I make you feel bad about yourself for any number of reasons? And I've listed a few already. And the challenge about that, not just the moment hurts, but the repeated inner dialogue that happens after that moment hurts. And that's what I want to talk about today is how can we change the inner dialogue so that it isn't a negative self-affirmation? How can we change it so that it means something else so that when we repeat it to ourselves, we aren't stuck in a loop of self-deprecation? Because that's what happens, right? We get stuck thinking about what that person said about us or how that person feels about us. And we repeat it in our mind and we have these thoughts and feelings and we visualize them saying it. We have all these things going on in our brain that reinforce that bad feeling. So I want to change that. I want to make sure that you don't get stuck in that vicious repeated loop so that you can move on. And what I'm going to share with you today has to do with some of the letters that I pick apart. I get some letters from clients that say, you know, my spouse, my partner, or this person sent me this email or sent me this text, and I want you to tell me if it's emotionally abusive or not, because, you know, I study that stuff, and I've learned throughout the years that I've been emotionally abusive, so I've had to learn and heal from my behavior, but I've also figured out particular wording that is emotionally abusive, that is manipulative. I mean, there's a lot of emotionally abusive supply in politics that I could watch and just get all this data and pick it apart. And I'm not pointing anyone out in particular. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that in politics throughout the years, there have been statements made and replies and responses made that can definitely be part of manipulation and emotional abuse. More manipulation than emotional abuse, because it's not necessarily a close relationship. But I've had people send me this stuff, and I'm able to pick it apart and share with them exactly why they feel how they feel when they read this. For example, an emotionally abusive comment might be, I can't believe you're doing this to the kids. You're such a bad mom. I've heard that. I've read that. I can't believe you're doing this to the kids. You're such a bad mom. Imagine that goes through your head. I'm such a bad mom. Because this is that outer inner dialogue. You hear it outside yourself, which is basically maybe on an email or a piece of paper or a text or even someone saying it to you. And you assimilate it inside yourself, and now it becomes part of your inner dialogue. I'm a bad mom. I'm doing something to the kids. I'm a bad mom or a dad. I'm a bad dad. Over and over again. And you don't want to think that, and you don't want to believe it. But because you get it from outside yourself and then you assimilate it inside yourself and make it part of your inner dialogue, it reinforces it to be more true. Even though you rationally might say, it's not true. This is ridiculous. Why do I keep saying this to myself? Yet there it is. It makes you feel bad. So something like that, that might be an emotionally abusive or manipulative or hurtful comment in some way that you bring into your system and then make it part of your reality day after day after day. It's so dangerous because, like I said, you're reading it usually in your own voice. And if you hear it in their voice, when you assimilate it, you put it in your own voice, typically. I mean, some people may keep it in their voice, but that's actually helpful. It's actually helpful to keep it in the other person's voice, because what I'm going to share with you in the next segment is how to transform that inner dialogue into something that keeps you out of this self-deprecation mode and puts a little sarcastic twist on it so that not only do you read something negative about yourself, which is the first part, but you sarcastically twist it in a way that reveals the true intent behind what they said. I'm going to leave you with that little mysterious comment, because it's going to be fun to actually twist this stuff around and take us out of this self-bludgeoning, self-defeating mode and put us into a more empowered state. So when we read something about ourselves or hear something about ourselves, that we transform it right away so that it doesn't become a negative repeated statement that makes us feel bad every time we hear it in our own head. More to come. Be right back. Well, I love when things just line up. It happened to me recently. If you've heard my last episode, I talked about some uncomfortable medical procedures I'm going through. I won't get into the details, but I will say that the doctor prescribed me antibiotics. The wonderful thing about antibiotics is they work at killing whatever foreign organism entered your body to cause harm. Isn't that weird to think about? Foreign organisms entering your body to cause harm? It's kind of creepy, actually. I'm grateful, though. I'm grateful for the antibiotics. But I also learned that they kill the good bacteria, too, the helpful stuff. And I found that a bit disturbing. In fact, did you know that there are good bacteria in your system right now that fight off bad bacteria? I find that existentially fascinating. We are big organisms on the planet doing our work. And then we have worlds within us with microorganisms doing their work for us. But like I was saying, we can inadvertently destroy the good bacteria by doing things that many of us do on a daily basis. Eating processed foods, especially refined sugar, smoking, breathing polluted air, being stressed all the time, and even taking medications like I am. This is why I'm so grateful to happen upon the perfect probiotic at the perfect time, just when I needed it. Kaya Biotics are high-quality probiotics to improve your gut health. Kaya Biotics are certified organic and include only organic ingredients, which is unheard of with your typical probiotic. You can tell why I was so happy to find Kaya Biotics. If you've been listening a while, you know that I only promote products that I trust. I want you to start being aware of those tiny, hardworking microorganisms inside of you, trying to fight off all the bad bacteria by themselves. The bad bacteria can build and overpower the good bacteria. That's why we end up with things like inflammation or a weak immune system, diarrhea, constipation, food allergies, and other intolerances. And if you were doing any of those behaviors I mentioned, you know, the smoking, eating processed foods, the sugar, or taking antibiotics like me, you'll benefit from taking probiotics. In fact, there's a big benefit in ordering from Kaya Biotics because they're offering listeners of this show $15 off their first purchase. It's a great chance to get one of their specifically designed products like Multibac, which creates diversity in your gut flora, Candida Complex, which helps fight yeast and Candida infections, which can severely harm and destroy gut flora, leading to reduced brain function, lack of concentration, and more. And also their product Body Plus, which is designed to, quote, positively influence the bacteroids Firmicutes ratio, which has been associated with weight loss. So get $15 off your purchase by visiting kayabiotics.com. That's K-A-Y-A and the word biotics.com, B-I-O-T-I-C-S. And enter the promo code BRAIN during checkout. Get the vegan, GMO-free probiotics that have gone through intense scientific study so that you end up with the best combination of probiotics to give you the best results for your health. Go to kayabiotics.com and use the promo code BRAIN during checkout to get $15 off your first order. Get a treat for your gut. All right, welcome back. I'm going to read you an email before I get into the transforming this inner dialogue stuff, because in this email, there's some inner dialogue that I want to help this listener with, but also some other stuff. But let's read this email. I'll make some comments on it. This is from a person I'm going to call Beth. I had to really shorten this email. I just condensed it into the specifics that I want to talk about. This person writes, I met a person at work. We went out on a date. After the date, he told me he liked me. I didn't say I liked him or not. I told him it was too soon to tell for me. The following few days, he didn't show up for work and he ignored my texts. I finally got a hold of him and I asked him if I could see him. He said yes. When I got there, there was alcohol and smashed glass on the floor. He told me he drinks when he is upset or angry to relieve the pain. I told him I wouldn't be okay with someone who takes that kind of action when they're angry. I also gave him some suggestions on what he could do differently that might relieve the stress and pain. We kept the relationship going and we got closer. He didn't drink again after that one time. Once we were together, we had a lot of fun. However, in time, I saw aspects of his personality that I found toxic. I witnessed him being racist several times, and I told him the racist comments he was making hurt me, and they went against my belief system. He became defensive, but he said he would make more effort in not being racist. However, he followed it up by saying that I was trying to change him. First the drinking, then the racism. I never looked at this as changing him. I looked at it as opening his eyes. But my efforts didn't last long because soon enough, he was being racist again. There were lots of other times in the relationship when we would have disagreements and he would get angry. Once he even whispered to me that I was, and I can't say these words on the air, an FNB. Figure that one out. We discussed that later and I got angry telling him that it hurts me and it goes against my relationship boundaries when someone disrespects me like that. I also asked him why he feels the need to hurt me when he gets angry. He said it relates back to his childhood and that while growing up, he was surrounded by people who spoke like that to one another. I told him I don't want to be in a relationship where my partner speaks to me the way he did. So he told me that he wouldn't do it again. I thought to myself, okay, but what if this does happen again? What would I do then? I decided to continue the relationship because I believed that he wouldn't treat me that way anymore. Then one day I got a promotion at work, and he didn't seem to care at all. Others were happy for me, but not him. I asked him why he didn't seem happy. He told me to shut the F up. I just got so mentally exhausted because he did end up disrespecting me again. He had another excuse as to why he treated me that way, but it didn't feel okay to me. I started to assess my relationship with him. I don't like the way he treats me or others. I love him, but I love myself more to know that I deserve better than disrespect. I told him on the way home from work that I was done with the relationship and I no longer wanted to see him. He didn't take it well at all. He clenched his fists and said, I swear I'm going to punch you in the face. At that point, I knew I had to leave the relationship because there was that potential that he could hurt me. On the way home, he called me. I ignored his calls at first, but finally I answered. He said I would never find someone like him and everyone I'll be with will cheat on me. Since we worked together, the next few days were hell. He would come up to me and tell me that everyone agrees with him and thinks he was in the right. He said, you don't love me because if you did, you would never leave. I would never leave you. No one would ever be as honest to you as I was. How could you do this to me knowing what I've been through in my childhood? I'm going to go back to drinking now. And he said a lot more than that. He ended up giving me a bag of receipts of the activities that we did together and photos of us. And he gave me a journal expressing how sorry he was and that I ended up with a guy who mistreated me and he will now continue the rest of his life regretting and feeling the wrath of his actions. It did make me feel emotional, but I also believed it to be manipulation. He told me the reason he gave me all that stuff was to remind me of my decision so that I might reconsider. He did agree to go to therapy once, however, he never did. I asked him what he was doing to heal his scars. He said, I know I won't disrespect you again. For me, that wasn't enough. His actions rarely matched up with his words. It's been a month since the relationship ended, and it's been hard. It's also gotten easier. Seeing him at work kills me, and it really makes me angry. But I focus on what I'm doing, then go home. He now speaks to me very professionally, and I don't really initiate conversation unless I have to. Ever since it ended, I feel a huge sense of guilt. I wonder why that is, and I think it's because I feel like it was my position to take care of him. But then I remind myself I did what I could, and if he doesn't want to change for himself, then it will never happen. But why do I feel this guilt? I also realize that I ask a lot of my close friends and family if they believe I made the right decision. I keep looking for confirmation. But why? I know deep down my gut was telling me it felt wrong. I'd like you to tell me what you think. I'm in my early 20s and I do feel like I have a life ahead of me, but I felt so attached to him. I still love him and I continue to love and respect him as a person. I also understand why he is the way he is. Even the disrespect. Have I been in a toxic and manipulative relationship? Was it emotionally abusive? How do you think I should approach working with an ex? Although I love my job, I did think of leaving for peace of mind, but I never want to look back and think the reason I left a good job was because of a relationship. I'm looking forward to hearing from you soon. Peace and love. Calling her Beth. All right, Beth, there's a lot to unpack here, but there are a couple major things that I want to focus on. But I'm just going to go through some of the things in your letter. Thank you so much for sharing that. And I'm so glad, first of all, I'm so glad that you're out of this relationship. I don't know if you've gotten back into it and things have changed. But from my perspective, at this point of view, at this time, the email you sent me says you're out of this relationship. So that's what I'll have to assume. This is a good thing because one of the most important things you said is the behavior that you saw, you didn't like. You know, the alcohol, the smashed glass on the floor, the racism, him putting you down and disrespecting you, all of these things, you have to first realize that's who he was when you met. And that's who he still is while you're in the relationship, regardless of his ability to shield it from you. In other words, that is who he is. Just because he says, okay, I'll try to be less racist. First of all, that statement is not really a healing statement that says anything that he feels like it was wrong. And secondly, it doesn't really say he's going to stop at all. It just says he's going to do it less. What I hear when he says that is, okay, I'll try to be less racist and I won't do it in front of you. And this is where you go back into yourself and ask yourself, do I want to be with a racist person? Because just because he doesn't do it in front of you doesn't mean he's still not that. I'm not saying that it isn't true. I'm not saying that he couldn't heal from that. I'm saying that when you hear this, especially the way he said it, you have to repeat in your own mind that he's telling you this in a way where he says, I'm going to work on being less racist in front of you. Now, in the last segment, I talked about transforming that inner dialogue. This is one part of it. So when someone says, I will do my best to be less racist, I want you to transform that dialogue because you're going to repeat it to yourself. Oh, he's going to do his best to be less racist. That's great because you feel like that's a good step in the right direction. It's not, but I want you to really understand what he is saying and what he isn't saying, first of all. That's step one. What isn't he saying? He isn't saying that you're right. I don't like carrying around this hatred toward other people. I think I need to work on that in myself. He's not saying that. I don't hear that at all, at least from your message here. What I do hear, what I do read from your message, is him saying, okay, I'll work on being less racist. I don't find it a problem in my life to be racist, but I hear what you're saying, so I won't do it in front of you because I know it makes you upset. When I transform that dialogue in my head, suddenly it paints a real picture. It paints a true picture of what I'm really hearing. This is the thing I want you to start practicing. You said you're in your early 20s. Everyone listening should do this, but the younger you start, the easier it is to do this from this point on, is to start transforming that dialogue. So when you hear someone say something that isn't fully what you want to hear, you have to reword it in a way that is probably more truthful. This is that little sarcastic twist where I might add something to what the other person said. For example, with your ex saying, oh, I'll do my best to be less racist. I would replay that in my head and add the following. Okay, I'll do my best to be less racist, not because I want to, but because I don't want to get in trouble with you. That's what I mean. It's like you transform it in a way that doesn't put you under the bus, doesn't make you feel inferior, but makes them more honest. And if they're more honest, you can work with honesty. I mean, they're not being more honest. He's not being more honest. He's just saying that to appease you from what it looks like. But by transforming that in your head, then you can do something with that instead of just thinking, well, I hope he does get better. because that's what we do. We rely on hopes and wants and hope that things get better and want it to get better. So we stick around waiting for it to get better, and then it doesn't, and then we get even angrier at the person, even though we put ourselves in the position of wanting and hoping and waiting. And instead of getting mad at them, we should really get mad at ourselves for investing more time when we really knew the truth of what was said. Because we hope that what they said was a good step in the right direction. But in this case, it turns out that what he's really saying is XYZ. So I just wanted to make that comment about, you know, I'll try to be less racist. I'll try to work on that. Doesn't really give you any closure at all. It just says, okay, and this is my transformation, I'll be less racist in front of you. That's all I hear. I don't hear him going, oh my God, you're right. I don't hear any type of enlightening moment in his voice, even though I'm reading this on paper and you're conveying it. Now, if you heard it, that's a different story. But my interpretation of what you wrote is him not being enlightened. It is just placating you. So there's one thing I want to comment on. Something else I already mentioned is, like I said, you met him the way he was, and the way he was hasn't changed. It's just being filtered in front of you. In fact, he even said who he was when you met him. When I get angry, I drink. I can't handle the anger, so I drink. This is something that you have to accept about him, of who he is. And if drinking to cover anger isn't in your values system, at that point, you make the decision whether you want to stay with him or not. And if you do, then it's like saying, then I accept that you drink to cover your anger. I accept that. And because I accept that, I love you anyway. And I want to be with you anyway. And when you drink, I'll be okay with it. I want you to be very clear. When someone says what they do that you don't like, and you would rather have them not do what they said that they do, I want you to be very clear that you will be accepting of that behavior because that's who they were when you met. The problem is we hope, like you said, I want to open his eyes. I want him to realize that there's other ways to handle this stuff. When we hope that someone will change after they meet us or after they're with us for a while, we often find ourselves disappointed. And I've often found that the people who do make changes for the person that they're with don't stick to those changes because they made the changes because of that person. And you said it yourself in this letter. I want him to make changes because he wants to for himself. But if you are not in the picture, he again revealed himself to you. As you were leaving the picture, as you were breaking up with him, he says, I'm going to start drinking again. So that clearly states that he is not changing for himself. He doesn't want to help himself. He was only doing it while you were in the picture. That says a lot. That says a lot, and it's a good lesson to learn when you're in your 20s. So again, bravo for leaving because you're with someone who doesn't feel like that he needs to change too much. I mean, again, from my interpretation, he doesn't seem like he wants to go to therapy, take a journey through self-help, you know, do meditation or try to find some healing somewhere. It just seems that he wants to make you happy with him. It sounds great, but it's not great. I want to make you happy. And because you don't like the way I do this, then I will stop doing it. Again, sounds great, but they have to stop doing it for themselves. And Beth, that's exactly what you said. I want him to do this for himself. So you're on the right path. And I'm going to get to your questions in a moment, but I just want to make a few more comments on what you said. Let's see. What you said a couple times has to do with relationship values and boundaries. And you sound like a really nice, passive person when it comes to your relationship boundaries. And I believe it's important to be a more active person when it comes to your relationship boundaries. I believe that when there's a clear violation of a boundary, when he called you those bad names, when he disrespected you, you have to make it so clear that it's unacceptable, that you will not take that ever again, that he realizes that there's a huge accountability for being that way. You have to make that clear. You can't necessarily be passive about it and say, you know, I don't like when you disrespect me. That's a violation of my boundaries, even though I teach that. I teach that. I don't like when you say those things to me because it feels disrespectful. That is what I teach, absolutely. But don't do it in a way where you are so passive about it that a clear message doesn't come across. I need the message to be clear. So when you say, hey, when you say that's very disrespectful, if you ever do that again, I'm going to leave. Because the intensity of how he violated your values, the intensity is big. That's a lot. The intensity is huge. He's saying really nasty things to you. So instead of saying, hey, you know, I don't like that. That feels very disrespectful. That's way too passive for me. I don't want to change who you are and make you some belligerent value and boundary protector, but going in that direction, especially the more intense the boundary or value violation, the more intense you need to be that it's unacceptable. Instead of just being a little bit passive of, hey, I'd like you to change that. I would like you to not do that anymore. Instead of doing it that way, if it's intense, you say, whoa, I'm not going to accept that behavior. If you ever do that again, I'm out of here. I'm not saying you have to say those words, but the energy, the intensity behind it has to be clear. Especially with someone that has his own issues. He said, oh, my childhood this, and I drink because of that. If he has these issues, you have to make it very clear so that you don't get sucked into his cycle of dysfunction. Because that's what they'll do. Some people will come in with all this dysfunction, all this behavior that brings you into their misery, brings you into their vortex of dysfunction. And you have to be careful not to get sucked into that. Because their dysfunction could be huge violations to your values and boundaries. How do you do that? You make it clear. I do not want to be a part of a relationship where I get treated this way. That will change or I will leave. Clear, period. That's it. That's how you become the master of your own fate, at least in the relationship. You make it clear what you will and won't accept. It doesn't mean if they mess up one day and say, oh, you jerk, I can't believe you did that, and you suddenly feel disrespected. There are times when the argument gets heated and things will come out. It doesn't mean you become belligerent and make them accountable right away. You actually can have conversations, and I have a feeling that you did try this. I have a feeling that you were along that path, but I just want to mention that it's okay to be more stern, more defiant in protecting your boundaries, protecting your values, so that they know that they've crossed the line and they should never do that again. Doesn't mean they'll change, but at least you're telling them this is not acceptable. Now, one of the things that he said to you about his childhood, you know, it wasn't my childhood, it's how I was raised, it's how they talk to each other, and that's why I talk to you that way. I call total BS on this. And I know that the after effects of abuse that can happen, we take from childhood and we bring it to our adult lives, but he's still doing the behavior that he is aware of that hurts you. And to use the excuse, well, that's how we treated each other in childhood. So that gives me permission to treat you this way today. I mean, I'm transforming that inner dialogue again. Well, you know, my childhood, I was a victim in childhood. It could be absolutely true, and he deserves sympathy for it, but not to the point where you're getting hurt, you're getting damaged, you're getting disrespected, your relationship boundaries are violated. That's where it has to stop. And you might have to become clear and say, whatever happened in childhood, I understand. If you have a problem with that, you need to get help for it. But to bring that behavior into our relationship doesn't make this a safe haven for me anymore. Does not make me feel comfortable that you know that this is from childhood and you're still not doing anything about it and you're bringing it into our relationship. That is unhealthy. That is unsafe for me. I don't like it. I don't want to be around it. Someone who tells you that story and doesn't seek help themselves wants to be seen as the victim. I'm going out on a limb here. I may be totally making this up about him. But I want you to see it this way, that he's telling you this story. You know, my childhood was hard. Therefore, you should be easy on me for treating you badly. Transforming that inner dialogue some more. You should be easy on me for making you feel bad about yourself. Huh? I mean, that's how I interpret it. You should be easy on me because I was the victim. No, you should go get help because you were the victim. Go figure yourself out before you bring that dysfunction into my world. I'm not trying to belittle or diminish anyone's childhood if they went through any trauma, but when you use that trauma as an excuse to mistreat others, that is not nice. That's not a nice way to do it. In fact, you have to look inward and ask yourself, do I want to treat others this way? Because if you do, and they're hurting because of that, it's time to seek some sort of help. That's my opinion. Because I believe you should bring the best version of you into the relationship, not the old traumatized version of you that hasn't gotten any help. I'm not saying that there aren't people that haven't tried to get help. That would be a different story. If he said, you know, I've been going to therapy for years and I'm trying to work on this stuff and I know I'm treating you wrong and I'm disrespecting you. I'm really trying. That's a different story. But I don't get that. I don't get that from him at all. I get, oh, I had a bad childhood, therefore you have to give me a break. No, I don't think so. Let me go to the next one here. One of the things that I really latch on to is you always find out the true character of someone when you say no to them. I think I wrote this recently. I think it was in a newsletter. When you say no to someone, when you tell them something that you know they don't want to hear, their true character comes out. What they really feel that's inside of them comes out. And I'm not saying that if you tell them that you betrayed them, when they suddenly get angry about it, oh, that's their true character. That's a different story. I'm saying that when you say, hey, I need to do this for me and I need to feel safe in my own skin, so I want to break up with you. If he suddenly says, well, I'm going to tell everyone you're a B-I-T-C, and I'm going to start drinking again, and this is all your fault, and if you loved me, you wouldn't leave me, and on and on and on and on. This is someone who has a lot of vengeance or just wants to make you feel bad for leaving him, and he says all these things because he wants you to stay, so he's going to say anything to make you stay, but this is part of his character to come up with all these mean things to say to you. That's who he is. This is the same person you met. It doesn't sound like he's changed. And it comes out even more when he's not getting what he wants. If you don't give me what I want, I'm going to start drinking again. If you really loved me, you wouldn't leave because you'd realize that I'm more important than you and you deserve to be treated badly. There's a reframe, right? We reframe it, we change the meaning of what they say, we transform that dialogue in our head so that it doesn't make us feel so bad, because that can be a damaging statement. If you really loved me, you wouldn't leave me? Yes, that's emotional abuse. That is using your own compassion and empathy against you. That is classic emotional abuse. If you really loved me, you wouldn't leave me. You need to transform that, because if you repeat that in your head, well, I do really love him, so he must be right. If I leave him, then it must be because I don't love him, but I really do love him, so he must think that I don't love him. And then we get scared that they think that we don't love them. We need to transform that. If you really loved me, you wouldn't leave me because you would be okay with the abuse. Because you should love someone that wants to hurt you. You should. You should love someone that wants to hurt you, because I'm the victim. And because I'm a victim, I have earned the right to hurt you. You see how I'm transforming all these things? I want you to transform what people say to you that make you feel bad so that you don't take it on yourself. Because if you take it on yourself, you start repeating it in your own voice and it becomes that negative self-affirmation and you start believing it. And it's damaging and it hurts. And then, of course, like you said, Beth, you feel guilty. You feel guilty because you believe what he says. But he has spent a lifetime, this is my guess, he's spent a lifetime learning how to make people feel guilty for not giving him what he wants. And he wants the right to hurt you. He wants that right. I don't want you to give him that right to hurt you. I want you to give yourself the right to feel loved, to be respected, to be honored. And then when you don't feel that, the other person should feel guilty for not doing that. The other person should feel guilty, but he doesn't want to feel guilty for doing that. So he, as the emotional abuser, Again, I'm making some assumptions here because I'm only using your letter as an interpretation. But he is the emotional abuser, does not want to feel bad about himself. So he pushes bad feelings onto you so that you feel bad about yourself, which makes him feel good about himself, putting him in a superior position of, well, you're the problem. And if you want to fix this, you won't leave me. You're going to come back to me because if you believe everything I say, then you'll feel so bad that your compassion will kick in and come back to me because you love me. I know you love me, and I know you feel bad because you're a nice person and you're a caring person. And because you care, you'll come back and give me what I want so that I can continue being abusive toward you. I twisted at the end. I'm sarcastic on purpose. But what it's all about is acknowledging what's being said, i.e., if you love me, you wouldn't leave me. I acknowledge that. That's what he said. Doesn't feel very good because that statement is designed to not feel good. It challenges your definition of love, which is important. How do you define love? Well, I define it by saying I support your happiness. Well, you'd make me happy if you stayed with me. Yes, but it has to work the same way, reciprocation. You have to support my happiness. And when you make me feel bad, then I can't love someone that makes me feel bad. There's some self-talk that you can get used to. I can't love someone that makes me feel bad. So you acknowledge what he says. If you love me, you wouldn't leave me. You say that to yourself, and then you transform it. If you love me, you wouldn't leave me because I have earned the right to abuse you, and you should let me abuse you, and loving me gives me permission to abuse you. You acknowledge it, you transform it, and then the third step is to say something else that's empowering, like, I don't want to love someone that makes me feel bad. It's sort of a three-step process, I guess. I just added that third step. And let me say something else about this guilt. It is completely manipulative when someone pours all these pictures on you and shows you all these receipts and says, look what we had together. Look what you're throwing away. That is a complete manipulation. I've done it in my past. I've played music that we used to like just to make her feel those old nostalgic feelings. And it is manipulative. It is definitely someone trying to influence you. So when you get all these pictures and these bag of receipts and things like that, it's him trying to pour on more guilt. Because what does guilt do? Guilt causes us to want to absolve what we are guilty of. How do we do that? Hey, all you need to do is come back to me and your guilt will be absolved. It's a complete con. It's a complete scam. Someone tries to make us feel guilty and they usually succeed, especially when they have the ability to do it. They come from dysfunction and they create emotionally abusive patterns of behavior. They know how to make us feel guilty and they will do and say things that play on your caring, your kindness, your generosity, and your compassion so that you feel guilty enough to then come back to them to give them the right to abuse you. I keep saying that because I want you to drill it in. I know in your email you said you still love him, you still have attachment toward him, but remember, he set that up on purpose. He put you in that space, and he did that by using your own kindness, compassion, and caring and generosity against you. They do that on purpose. They know you will feel guilty. It's just like if he brought you a tiny kitten and said, and I hate to say this, but he said, I'm going to hurt this kitten unless you come back to me. Of course, you're going to want to come back. Hopefully that never happens. And sorry to put that picture in your head, but this is sort of along the same lines. He's playing and preying on your emotions. And you have to be very careful with those types of people. That is total emotional abuse. You get sucked into that and it's very hard to get out. I have talked to too many clients that are in emotionally abusive relationships that feel this guilt because the guilt was planted on them. It was coerced into them so that they feel guilty, so that they always stay with the abuser. That is one of the most vital components of my message to you, Beth. Now, let me get to the questions that you added at the end. You said, I keep looking for confirmation from my friends and family that I did the right thing. Why? I know deep down my gut was telling me it felt wrong. This is old patterned, old behavior that needs to be rewired in you. And you rewire it using the language changing that I told you earlier, the transformation of that inner dialogue. Because when you read something, when you hear something, you transform it into having meaning inside of you. And if somebody says something bad about you or bad that you're doing, and you take that in, you start to believe it's true. And when you believe it's true and you don't transform it and say things like, well, I have a right to abuse you. This is why I want you to love me. Then the old pattern with the old dialogue stays. The old dialogue is, if you really love me, you wouldn't leave me. That's the old dialogue. That sentence, of course, would make most of us feel bad because it forces us to face our own values of, well, I do love people, and of course I don't want to hurt anyone. There's another one. You're hurting me by doing this. You're hurting me. Could be true, but when used against you as a tactic to make you feel guilty, look at all the pictures that we had together. Look at this. Look at that. Look at our history together. How could you drop all of this? When it's used against you to make you feel guilty, that's when you have to see the forest through the trees and realize, oh, this is toxic. I got to get away from this person. This is not right. And you transform the dialogue. Look at this history that we had together. I want you to feel so guilty that you come back to me so that I can continue to do bad behavior and disrespect your values and boundaries. Transform that dialogue. This is so you don't have to seek confirmation from anyone else. You know what needed to be done, and you did it. You didn't dilly-dally around that. You said, no, I can't be in this relationship anymore. Good job. You don't need outer confirmation from that because it's your relationship. If you have a bad feeling about it, if you know there are value violations and boundary violations, then you break it off. You tried talking about it, but it didn't work, so you break it off. That's all the validation you need, your own. You don't need anyone else's validation. You know enough to know that you weren't happy. You might have had fleeting moments of happiness or maybe long moments of happiness, but you weren't happy, so you get out. Not only because you weren't happy, but because it was toxic, it was dangerous, it was destructive. You don't need any more validation than self-validation there. You say, I still love him and I continue to love and respect him as a person. I also understand why he is the way he is, even the disrespect. That's all well and good. You can still love him and you can love him from afar. That's nice. You can still respect him as a person. It sounds like he's treating you professionally at work. Great. So you don't have to deal with any of the other problems that you said. Now he sounds like he's now showing up in a better way at work, so even better. You say you understand the way he is and even the disrespect. Great. Those are all good pieces of information, and I don't have a problem with that. The only suggestion is you can love him from afar. You can love that person over there, but it doesn't mean you have to have them in your life. In fact, you've probably heard me say this before, but it is often and almost always a gift to leave the abuser. It's a gift to them, to both of you, but to them especially, because it stops giving them someone to abuse and it allows them to consider the accountability of their behavior. So this relationship could have been the best thing that happened to him because you left. So just keep that in mind. Your other questions, have I been in a toxic and manipulative relationship? Yes. Sorry, that's just a yes. Was it emotionally abusive? Yes. How do you think I should approach working with an ex? Okay, so there's a totally different question. Yes, it was emotionally abusive. Yes, it was manipulative. And it sounds like he is not the stalker type that is now trying to pursue you and keep going after you and breadcrumb you. You know that term, breadcrumb, where they text you one day and say, how are things going? Even though they haven't commented on the breakup and they haven't commented on, you know, things they did wrong. There's a term called breadcrumbing and emotional abuse where they just keep leading you on and they just want to make sure that you're still out there as a backup plan. It doesn't sound like any of that's going on. So that's great. So this is the best kind of breakup, in my opinion, where you just go your separate ways and you try to be cordial. Perfect. But how do you think I should approach working with an ex? Although I love my job, I did think of leaving for peace of mind. And I never want to look back and think the reason I left a good job was because of a relationship. I don't have a problem leaving a job because of a relationship. Yeah, you might look back and go, geez, you know, that was a great job. I had great pay. But I left because I wasn't comfortable around that person. I look at something like that and I think, okay, A, can I handle being around that person? Will I get over it? I actually did work with an ex once, and it was very difficult. It was very difficult, but I was able to handle it and accept it and get over it. Doesn't mean I didn't have feelings. It doesn't mean I didn't feel weird around them. It just meant I could do my job while they were there, and that 90% of the time, it didn't affect me. So this is one of those things where if you're affected more than 50% of the time, and you don't like being there more than 50% of the time, then, you know, I don't have a problem with you just saying, I got to get out of here because I don't enjoy my day. That might be terrible advice. You may have the perfect job that'll never come around again, and it's the perfect situation. I don't know. But me personally, I have values that I uphold, that I want to keep in mind, that if I'm not happy at my job, if I am uncomfortable there every day, and I spend 8, 10, 12 hours a day there, why would I want to be uncomfortable 8, 10, 12 hours a day? Uncomfortable might be a light word, but let's just say that you are really irritated or you are really upset every time you are near him, and you're near him 80% of the day. Like I said, I don't have a problem leaving a job when I'm uncomfortable more than 50% of the time. Doesn't mean I automatically leave. It just means I really take that into consideration. If you're only uncomfortable 10, 20, 30% of the time because he comes in and out of the office or he comes over to your desk, but it's all professional, then maybe you can handle it. Maybe it'll be okay. And I think what'll happen is that as you feel less and less guilty and more okay in yourself and stop lowering your own self-worth and self-esteem by believing anything that he said, as that rises in you as well, you're going to feel more and more comfortable in your own skin in that situation. And I've seen where exes can work together and finally become more friendly toward each other, but not necessarily ever as close as they were, even as friends before the relationship. It can happen. It happens all the time. That's why they say no fraternizing at work, but it happens all the time. So it's just a matter of asking yourself, is this something that's improving every day, or is it getting worse and worse and worse? Or is it something that I can barely handle? You know, where are you with that? And then go from there. But I think I've covered most of your email, Beth. So thank you so much for writing that. I went over the idea of transforming inner dialogue into something that is more productive and doesn't put you on the chopping block. It takes you out of the line of fire because you don't want those things sticking around. You don't want to continue having these thoughts that put you down. Just like I was saying earlier, when you get a text from someone and they're putting you down, you have to be very careful about reading that text. In fact, I would give you a suggestion that I talked about in many, many episodes ago. Don't read hurtful texts or messages or emails in your own voice. Read it in some goofy voice. I'm serious. And just make up some goofy voice. Think of someone goofy you saw in a cartoon or a movie and use their voice. I like to use the voice of a donkey. I think of what a donkey would sound like. Then when I read something that might be hurtful or damaging in some way, I will change what I hear in my head as I read it to that donkey's voice. I'm not saying that resolves everything, but not only do I do that, I also add the sarcastic twist and transform it. And then I also add a more empowering statement after that. And I'm going to go over that during the outro of the show. When the music's playing, I'll give you some examples of that so that you can get a better idea of how to do this. Anyway, thank you for writing, Beth, and thanks for listening to another episode. We'll be right back. I'll say some more thank yous, and then I'll close the show with my final words. Be right back after this. Thank you for listening to another episode of The Overwhelmed Brain. I want to thank Kaya Biotics. Visit KayaBiotics.com and use the promo code BRAIN during checkout to get $15 off your first order. That's KayaBiotics.com. It's a great treat for your gut. And I want to thank the following patron members, Ken, Daydreamer, Karen, Lisa, and RJ, and Christina, for being long-term supporters. I appreciate you, and I appreciate anyone in the patron program. If you want to support the show yourself, go to patron.theoverwhelmedbrain.com. Not only is it a great way to show your appreciation for the show, it also helps us keep it running. And I also provide private episodes in there and workbooks and worksheets. In fact, I may have a workbook for this very episode. I think I'm going to create one because it gets deeper into how we can reframe or transform our inner dialogue so that we feel a little bit better each time something happens, each time we typically feel bad. So I think I'm going to end up doing that. Creating a workbook. In fact, in a moment, I'm going to give you some more examples that will appear in that workbook too. So head over to patron.theoverwhelmedbrain.com if you want to support the show and get those private episodes and workbooks and worksheets. And I want to thank Jay. He wrote me an email and said, "Hey, I just wanted to let you know I love your show and it changed my life. Thanks." Thank you, Jay. I tried to reply to your email, but it didn't work. I don't know. You gave me an email address that didn't go through, or maybe I typed something wrong, but here's my thank you. I appreciate you, Jay. Thanks so much. And I'm so glad to hear that. And let me tell you about the Mean Workbook. I did talk about some emotional abuse today. It was asked in the email as well. Let me just give you the quick points on that. The Mean Workbook is for a difficult relationship. It's an evaluation and healing guide for those relationships that are just hard to figure out. And you ask yourself, why is this so complex? It shouldn't be so complex. The workbook has a 200-point assessment that classifies where you are on the emotional abuse and manipulation spectrum. Hopefully it's low, but a lot of people that reach out and get the workbook find out a lot about their relationship just through the assessment alone. So it's helpful if you want to recognize and pinpoint exactly how you may be being manipulated. It also helps you improve the way you communicate with your partner, and it also helps you determine if the relationship can be saved or not. I mean, do you need to plan your exit? Is it that bad? That's what the assessment helps you determine as well. So there's more to it, but it's all about starting the healing journey of increasing your self-worth and self-esteem and learning how to trust your instincts and decisions again. And that's so important. So if you want to check that out, go to loveandabuse.com and see if that's what you need for your relationship. That's loveandabuse.com. And finally, I'd like to thank Kevin McLeod of incompetech.com for some of the music transitions in The Overwhelmed Brain. And for my final words, I'm just going to give you some examples of this reframing and transformation process of inner dialogue. It's a little challenging to just hear this and figure it out and come up with the reframes on the fly, which is why I think I'm going to put it in the workbook. But I want to give you a few, and maybe you can get the gist of it so that you can take something with you. So that when someone says something that makes you feel bad, which a lot of people out there unfortunately do that, hopefully not too many in your life, but if it happens, what can you do to counter that? What can you do to feel better about yourself when someone's trying to make you feel bad? So that's what this little outro segment's about. I'm going to give you some examples, but let me just go over the three-step process again. The first step is to acknowledge in your mind what was said by repeating it. And that might mean if somebody says, "You're an idiot," you acknowledge and repeat that in your mind. Okay, he said, "You're an idiot." Don't say that he said, "I'm an idiot." Just acknowledge and repeat in your mind exactly what the other person said. He or she said, "You're an idiot." Now, when you acknowledge and repeat that, what do you feel? If somebody called that to me, I might laugh. Because it's just ridiculous, because I don't believe that about myself. But let's just say I did, because there's a small part of me that believes I'm an idiot because I did something wrong or I made a mistake. That's what happens. That's why we feel bad, is that there's actually a small part of us that believes what they're saying. That's what causes this bad feeling that we have. So let's just say somebody called you an idiot. First step is acknowledge that in your mind. Okay, he said you're an idiot. What do you feel? I feel angry. I feel defeated. I feel you're going to come up with some emotions. This is just an acknowledgement. It's helpful to at least label some of these things that you're feeling. All right, number two is add a sarcastic twist that paints a true picture, or one that you believe to be true, of what is being said. That was a little trickier because what you're going to do is repeat what you said in step one, which is what they said. Okay, so you're an idiot. Okay, he said you're an idiot. So I'm going to add something to that as if he were saying that to me, but also expressing some inner truth in him of why he's saying it. Again, like I said, it's a little hard to explain, but let me give you the you're an idiot example. I'm going to pretend he's saying it to me again. You're an idiot. And then I'm going to add on to what he said in my mind, some sarcasm. So I'm going to say, you're an idiot. And I say that because I'm too stupid to have an intellectual conversation. So I'm just going to resort to name calling. So I added that sarcasm and in my mind made him, I don't want to say inferior, but I guess a little bit, but I made him acknowledge truth that's going on in him. I mean, in my mind, this is all in your mind because you have to remember this whole thing works if you realize that you really aren't what they're saying you are. And this only applies if you really aren't. I mean, if they blamed you for punching them in the face, then you kind of have to take that. You kind of have to say, oh, yes, I have to acknowledge that I did punch them in the face. And yes, I was a jerk. I'm not talking about those situations. I'm not talking about those situations where there's actual responsibility on your part and you must take it. I'm talking about times when you don't deserve it. And that's a lot. There's a lot of people out there that put us under their thumb and make us think that we deserve to be talked to that way. And you don't. And especially in emotionally abusive relationships, you do not deserve to be talked to in a lot of ways when people are angry because they're going through their own stuff. So like I said, this whole thing works when you realize that somebody else is going through their own stuff and you don't deserve to be talked to that way. You don't deserve to be put down. So let's go on with this. I'll repeat what I said. Number two is add that sarcastic twist that paints a more accurate picture of what's going on inside of them or what's being said. You're an idiot, and I say that because I'm too stupid to have an intellectual conversation, so I'm going to resort to name-calling. I mean, when you hear that, that kind of makes me laugh. I don't know if it makes you laugh, but it puts them in a different light for me. And it does actually turn on a little bit of compassion, not much, but a little bit toward them. But at least I'm not so focused on, oh, I'm an idiot. Oh, that feels awful. I'm changing it around. I'm reframing it. So that's step two. Step three is to close the loop. And you close it by making an empowering declaration or statement that highlights what kind of person that you do or don't want in your life. It also highlights what kind of person you are or want to be. And the way you do this, so I'm going to repeat that because, again, this is a little challenging. You say something that empowers you, that declares who you want or who you don't want in your life and declares who you are. So, for example, you're thinking, so he called me an idiot. Now I'm going to make this declaration. I don't want people I love to call me an idiot. I mean, that's a declaration, right? I don't want people I love to call me an idiot. Okay, that's fine, but what's more empowering than that? How about, I deserve to be spoken to with respect? I mean, think about that. When you say, I deserve, you put power into that word and you empower yourself. Because a lot of people will go through life thinking that they don't deserve to be respected or don't deserve to be treated nicer because the people they're with have convinced them that they're not deserving. I'm telling you right now, you are deserving. You deserve to be treated with respect. And the way I can prove that's true is ask you, do you treat people with respect? This is one of those do unto others as you want them to do to you. Treat others the way you want to be treated. Be the change that you want to see in the world. This is how you gauge how you deserve to be treated. I deserve to be treated this way because I treat people this way. So think of that in your declarations, even when you think you're not worth it. Because if you say, I deserve to be spoken to with respect, then you have this inner critical doubt that comes up and says, yeah, but maybe he's right about this. Maybe I'm not such a good person. No, don't use that gauge. Don't use the gauge that somebody else is using. Use your gauge which is how do I treat other people? Because once you use that as a gauge, how I treat other people, your filter changes. You start feeling that you've earned, you know, respect or dignity or just any kindness and caring. You have earned it. When you are that way, you have earned it. If anybody tells you differently, then replay this recording. All right, the next example I'm going to use is, how about this one? You should really lose some weight. If that makes you feel bad, which it does for a lot of people, reframe the dialogue. We'll start with step one. Acknowledge and repeat it. So I'm going to repeat it in my mind. He or she said, you should really lose some weight. Now, unless it's a doctor or somebody really fears for your life because you're just in a bad way, and they are saying it out of care instead of you should lose some weight so you're more attractive or whatever, because some people will say that. Some people will say that I'm not attracted to you because you're too heavy, or you should lose some weight because I don't want to be seen with you. I mean, they're going to be mean. They're going to say mean things like this. I'm just putting it out there. There's a difference between that, where it doesn't come from a place of love and caring and wanting you to be happy. Those kind of statements are more self-oriented. They are selfishly saying, you should lose weight because I want you to. That's kind of a selfish thing. And the unselfish person, the one that does it from love, is someone who doesn't have anything riding on it except that they love you and want you to feel better, be in a better space, whatever it is. This is a tricky one because, you know, sometimes weight is a very personal thing and sometimes it's a very sensitive thing. You got to be careful with some people, but I think you know what I mean. You always know when it's coming from a loving place as opposed to a selfish place. So let's just work with this one. You should really lose some weight. You say that to yourself. You should really lose some weight. That's what he said. This helps you get the message accurately. You don't want to mess it up. Say exactly the way he or she said it. What do you feel? How does that make you feel? No, I feel sad. I feel angry. I feel, you know, all these things. Just acknowledge those feelings. Now, this is where we can add the twist to paint the real picture. What are they really saying? What's underneath that? You should really lose some weight because as long as I'm focused on you and what you need to do in your life, I can ignore the healing that I need to go through to make me not such a judgmental person. See what I did there? I repeated exactly what the person said. You should really lose some weight. And then I added, because as long as I'm focused on you and what you need to do in your life, I can ignore what needs to heal in me because I want to stay a judgmental, uncaring, unsupportive person. What this does when you really think about it, when you really break this stuff down, is helps you understand why they're saying it and where they're coming from. Because it's important to visit that and understand where it comes from. Not because I want you to necessarily have compassion for someone who put you down, but to make sure that you don't stay focused on yourself and feel bad. This is diversion from feeling bad. How do I divert from feeling bad? You're countering it. So that's a counter by repeating that person's words and then adding that sarcastic twist as if they were really saying that. It's sort of like if the world suddenly turned honest and the world suddenly knew exactly why they did the things they did. And every time they spoke, all of this extra information came out. And then we aren't so focused on what they're pointing out in us because they're pointing out something else in them that needs healing. All right. So number three in this one, you know, you should really lose some weight. Close the loop with something empowering. And this will be different for everyone, but I came up with, my weight is my issue and no one else's. I have been in this relationship long enough to have earned respect and kindness. So I will not tolerate that. I don't deserve that. My weight is my issue and not yours. That empowers me when I try this on. I like that. It may be different for you, but that's what I like. Let's do two or three more. How about this one? This one is a really abusive one. I'll hurt myself if you leave. That's like what Beth experienced. Or Beth said that he said, I'm going to start drinking again because you left. But let's work with a tough one. I'll hurt myself if you leave. All right, let's work with that. I'm going to acknowledge it. He said, I'll hurt myself if you leave. How do I feel about that? Well, oh, geez, I feel, you know, whatever, guilty. I feel angry. I feel stuck. Okay, now let's paint the real picture of what he's saying. I'll hurt myself if you leave because I'm completely incapable of loving you in a healthy way. I would rather you feel guilty for honoring yourself instead of feeling warm, loving support from me. This counters what the person said and breaks it up a little bit so it's not all about you. So what we do, we make it all about us. Oh my God, they said this about us. Now I feel awful. No, let's break it apart. Let's see what they're saying about themselves. What they're saying about themselves is, I'll hurt myself if you leave because I'm completely incapable of loving you in a healthy way. Hey, that's important. That's important for you to know, in case anyone ever says that to you. And they're also saying, I would rather you feel guilty for honoring yourself instead of feeling any warm, loving support from me. Number three is close the loop with something empowering, which is something I might say, which is, I will not be threatened or made to feel guilty for anyone else's choice to not seek help. I only want people in my life that value my happiness and support my journey. That may or may not work for you, but when I try it on, I feel good. I will not be threatened or made to feel guilty for someone else's choice not to seek help. All right, let's do a couple more. I promise I'll never do that again. Have you ever heard that one? I promise I'll never do it again. Acknowledge. Okay, she said, I promise I'll never do that again. What feelings come up? Identify those. Number two, paint the real picture. Okay, you know, the sarcastic twist. I promise I'll never do that again. And if you believe that, it will buy me some time to make you trust me again so that I can do it again. So as long as you believe me now, I can repeat the cycle and earn your trust over and over again every time to get away with it. Whoa, there's a big one. But that's what I'm hearing. You know, when there's doubt that comes up in your mind, when you hear somebody say something like this and that doubt comes up, reword it in your mind so you know exactly what they're saying. It helps you feed the critical thinking center of your brain so that you know exactly what's being said. Because if you only listen to the words, I promise I'll never do that again, and never go beyond that, then you may never get to the point where you become more aware and more observant of their behavior, which I've made as part of step three, closing the loop. Something empowering I might say is, I will not give you another chance. I am a two strikes and you're out kind of person. No one takes advantage of me because I refuse to let them make a fool out of me. I am now aware and observant of your behavior, and I will not tolerate it in my life. How powerful is that? I will not tolerate it in my life. Well, what does that mean? You might go into some fear mode. What does that mean? I won't tolerate it. Then what? Do I leave? Do I get a divorce? Do I quit my job? What does that mean? Doesn't matter. Just say it. Just empower yourself with that. You'll figure it out. But you need to start empowering yourself so that you can create new tools, new resources when you need them. Because if you don't have this foundation of empowerment, it's hard to make any decision. This is why a lot of people get stuck. They think, oh, if I say something like that, then what? Then what do I do when it happens again? It doesn't matter. You need to get into this space now. Let's do the last one. This can often be heard in emotionally abusive relationships, just like I'll hurt myself. They'll say something like, you're so sensitive. God, you're sensitive. I don't know if you've ever heard that, but if you've been in that type of relationship, when someone's doing something bad and then they explain to you in a way that tries to downplay it and you get angry, they might say, you're so sensitive. Okay, let's go through this one. Acknowledge it. Okay, he said, you're so sensitive. What feelings come up? Number two is paint the sarcastic picture by adding to it. You're so sensitive. I can't believe you fall for that over and over again. Do you ever notice how I get away with almost anything when I put all the focus on you? I love being able to control you like that. Should I repeat that one? You're so sensitive. I can't believe you fall for that over and over again. Do you ever notice how I get away with almost anything when I put the focus on you? I love being able to control you like that. Try that one on. Number three, close the loop. Empower yourself. You know what? Damn right I'm sensitive. I'm now aware of what you're doing, and I refuse to fall for that anymore. My voice deserves to be heard, and my words deserve to be validated. All right, lots of brain work there. I know these are hard to come up with on the fly. Well, they were for me. I had to write these down. But once you start doing this more and more, then when you are in situations where someone's trying to make you feel bad and you do that reframing, you do that reconfiguring in your mind, you're less likely to be in a frozen state where you just can't think of anything to say or you're just dumbfounded. You're more likely to be in an empowered state, which is why I put step three in there, so that you can at least continue the conversation without getting lost in self-defeat and self-deprecation because you believed what they said or something. It takes some work, but if you're around people that are like this, then you have plenty of opportunity for practice. I hope you're not, but I know there are people listening that are around people like this and will have plenty of time to practice. And you can look at it that way too. You can look at it, hey, I can't wait for them to try to put me down again. I know it sounds awful. So that I can practice this in my mind. Because if I have to deal with it anyway, I might as well make it into an experiment. I might as well make it into an exercise so that I can gain something from it. I want you to gain something from everything that you do so that you can be happier. And like I said, if you're in the Patreon program, I'll probably have a workbook on this so that you can get some more ideas. That'll probably be out in like a week or so. But today, here's what I want you to do. I want you to keep an open mind. This will let you step into your power so that you can be firm in your decisions and actions so that you can create the life you want. Always take steps to grow and evolve. You are powerful beyond measure. And some people in your life don't realize that. And above all, let me say this. This is something I absolutely know to be true about you. You are amazing.